I'm Leslie Cornwell. I'm a certified nurse midwife with Empowering Midwifery Education. I do these wonderful midwife interviews about twice a year, spring and the fall. And it's always so fun to meet midwives the last few years all over the country and their stories and their experiences. And the intent is just to get some words of wisdom out there. And if someone's doing something you love or you want to learn from them, we now know each other exists. Like, I think in COVID and post-virtual world, there's benefits, but then there's also things being lost. So thank you, Rhonda, for being here with me today.
You're very welcome.
So Rhonda, tell me about your backstory. You were one of the first that I didn't get to say, hey, just start out, because usually I regret not doing the record while you're talking. So tell me your midwifery journey.
Ah, okay. So, well, I guess, I mean, the beginning is interesting because I think some people know that that's what they want to be, and other people, I think, kind of come upon it and discover it. And sometimes it's through their own childbirth or something like that. For me, it was actually, I spent a year at the University of Ghana in my sophomore year of college. So it was a great year. And when I went over there, I was probably thinking more of a field like social work. That's kind of what I was thinking. But I was hitchhiking around the country. And I got my friend and we got picked up by two Salvation Army nurses that were from Holland. And they were running a little clinic way back in the very rural area. And they said, for some reason, that really kind of intrigued me. And so, you know, I said, wow, that's really interesting. They said, well, you're welcome to come and join us anytime. So we were students, we were poor students. So we hitchhiked two different weekends up to join them. And that was great fun. That was a lot of fun because, you know, culturally it was fun. They were, you know, they were from the Netherlands, and they would have their afternoon tea. But one of the weekends where we had joined them, they had a woman come in labor. And again, I was 19 years old. I don't know what intrigued me about that, but there was something just really intriguing about that. And I asked them, I said, if she wouldn't mind, would you mind if I would watch the birth? So they asked her and she said, no, she didn't mind. And so they came and woke us up in the middle of the night. We were sleeping under our mosquito netting, and we got up and just kind of stood in the background and watched this birth. And it was two women, the two nurses and this laboring woman. And it was so inspiring to me to watch them. She, of course, was totally natural. And I just, you know, we went over and I remember looking at this little newborn baby and I remember thinking, that's what I want to do. And so I had to change everything. I had to change all the courses I was taking because I was much heavier into kind of the social sciences and psychology and sociology and things like that. And so all the, then I had to go back and take an chemistry and, you know, statistics and all those things that I had not been taking, the hard sciences. It took a while, and so because that took me into just a nursing school. So on the way to making sure that that's what I wanted to do, since I had never been interested in a medical field at all, I went down and lived in Puerto Rico for 10 months and worked at a hospital, a very rural hospital down there in the mountains, and loved it. So I worked as just a nurse's aide, and I thought, this is exactly what I'd like to do. This was more just a regular nursing, but even that was fascinating to me. I didn't know that it would, that was going to be. So anyway, so then I looked into programs. Actually, the head nurse in Puerto Rico, she was Puerto Rican and she was very helpful. She said, you've gotten enough background in terms of now the classes that you've taken is you shouldn't get a 2 or 3 year degree. You should really get your BSN because with this, you know, with the same amount of work, you can end up with the BSN because you have all these other elective courses you've taken. So I looked, and at that point, there were not very many schools. This was in, I guess I was looking in 74 and 75, you know, 1974, 75. So there weren't a lot of schools that had BSN programs or that would give you that credit. So the University of Colorado in Denver had that program where they would give me full credit for that. It was a two plus 2.5 years, which meant that the first 2 years were electives, and then the second 2.5 years were all the nursing. So that's what I got. I got almost full credit except for one class I needed that I took in a community college, moved to Denver to finish my nursing and got my nursing degree. So that was fun.
I was going to say you're a traveler in so many levels already when you're so young. When did you get your nursing degree finished?
78. So in 1978, I graduated. And then I worked in labor and delivery. Then we moved to Cincinnati. There's a number of reasons for that, but we moved to Cincinnati, which is where I still am. And I worked on some regular floors, and then I did work in labor and delivery again. And I also then, I had my first baby during that period of time. And Cincinnati compared to Denver was, I would say, much, much more regressive in terms of how they dealt with births.
I'm a Michigan girl. I know the Midwest well.
So, you know, they had one birthing room where you could have someone with you. All the other rooms were regular labor rooms, quote, which meant that there were two women in one room who did not know each other, both of them in labor. No one could support you. The delivery rooms, you were flat on your back with your legs up in stirrups. You could not touch your baby afterwards. Sometimes your hands were tied down. It was terrible. And after working there, I thought, there is no way that I will have my baby like this. And I had already been in at the University of Colorado Hospital, and they were much more progressive in terms of, you know, you could walk in labor, you could go natural, you could have people with you. I mean, it was totally different. So anyway, there was a home birth practice in Cincinnati with a doctor and a number of direct entry midwives. And so that's what I did, is I had a home birth. My first baby, and actually it ends up that all four of my children were born at home. And then in 1983, my first baby was born in 80. In 1983, I had helped several friends have a home birth, and just kind of being an assistant since I had been a labor and delivery nurse. And the midwives group actually contacted me and said, would you be interested in joining us? We need another midwife. And so for 7 years, I actually was working as a direct entry midwife RN. And, you know, good doctor backup. He was wonderful. Yeah. He was very supportive. And if we had any trouble, he would always come. And, but he wasn't one, I mean, depending on what the situation was, he wasn't one to say, oh, they need to go to the hospital. He would sometimes come to the home and say, no, I think we're okay. Let's do this or let's do that. Or
it's a rare thing nowadays to get good docs like that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. He was very rare. And very special. And I think part of his background, which again is an interesting story, is that he had worked in the military and he had a terrible experience with the OB in it, because he said they would line the women up, they would all be numb so they couldn't push. He would go down and do forceps after forceps after forceps and pull these babies out. And he said to himself, there has to be a better way to do this.
Well, and it's kind of a lost art, because, like, I don't know, the medical system is just ingraining more and more, like, this is how we make it better. We've got to control it more. Like, there's something in the medical school training that's not even getting them to flag, like, this isn't humane. Like, it's interesting how the teaching is pathwayed.
Yes. Yes. And it's interesting. Yes, it's interesting. And in Cincinnati, at least, that home birth practice, we had excellent statistics. I mean, just excellent statistics in terms of our C-section rate. It was less than 10%. Our outcomes were wonderful. It was very, very good. And so he did several things that I thought were important. One was, one of the first things he said is, he said, the best thing an obstetrician can do is sit on their hands.
Because I need a quote from him, and he signed it and we put it everywhere and we'll pass it on to ACOG. Yeah.
Because that's what he said. He said, we always want to intervene. And why? You know, labors are very variable and women deal with it totally differently. And you just give it time. And most of the time it'll happen. And, you know, and we want to intervene and we want to get in there. And we usually complicate things and the outcomes are worse. The other very memorable thing I remember was that there, the first time I ever had a retained placenta. And so was at a home birth, and he happened to be there. Sometimes insurance would cover it. That was a point where insurance would cover home births. They don't anymore, but they did at that time. And they So but he had to be there in order for it to be covered by insurance. So he was just there, and I think he was reading a newspaper and kind of in the background. He never interfered. He let us do what we needed to do. But I told him, I said, it's been more than a half hour. I feel like her bleeding is increasing right now, and it feels like we need to do something. And so I was stepping out of the way for him to come in, and he said, "No, no, no." He said, "Look at the size of your hands and look at the size of my hands. You're the one that needs to do this." So, because of course she's natural, and of course it's a really tricky
Yeah, hurts and small and gentle, as
Yeah,
best you can
exactly.
of a manual extraction. Ugh.
Exactly. So he talked me through it, and just gently and very patiently, and just said, "This is what you're going to do." And he just talked
Well,
me through
even just
it.
the simple little art of teaching the next generation of midwives how powerful it is just to talk to them for 5, 10 seconds before you do something. It makes a huge difference. That fear, that anxiety of like people just do. I'm like, I understand this is quote unquote a medical emergency, but 5 seconds of just talking to her and say, "I'm so sorry, you're bleeding more than ever." Like, this is the art of home birth that we just don't see in the hospital much. Like, "I am so sorry you're bleeding, but I have to. This is going to hurt for about 30 seconds. And it's really important." And that we'll talk through it and breathe. And then you do it versus you just are doing all this stuff to her. And she's like,
Exactly. It's
Yeah.
scary. It hurts. I mean, it feels like you just can take even the pain better if you understand why and what you're doing.
Well, because you're not fighting the well, it's you're not fighting the unknown of like things being done to you. You're like, okay, it hurts, but she's doing it to help me. I've got to breathe through this, or it's for my baby, or like those situations versus just tons of stuff done to you and you have no idea what's going on. Yeah, that's when it's way worse.
The other thing that I found about stuff like that is that sometimes even in the middle of it, just taking a few minutes when it was to the point where it was almost intolerable, and I would say, "Okay, I'm not taking my hand out, but let me give you some breathing space."
Pause,
And
yeah,
then
just
take a
pause,
nice
don't
deep
shift,
breath.
don't move.
Exactly. And then just tell me when you're ready for me to continue. And then she could tell me, and then we would be successful. And then she felt like she had some control, and that it wasn't that I was kind of taking over without her having any say in the
Yeah.
process.
Right. Okay, you let me breathe. Thank you for letting me breathe. Okay, go back to what you're doing. Yeah,
Exactly.
it's even just the little things of like the so many variations of opinions of like perineal massage and touching the perineum and like I'm like just if you're gonna put a hand there for guidance, don't wiggle around. Don't like some women like just a little gentle on the base of the perineum for guidance, but it doesn't mean you're going in, you're moving all over the place. You're just putting gentle guidance. Like those little art things are being lost. They're not taught in school. It's if you did clinical home births or you had a good practicing midwife, you're taught those little art things. So that's what I want these words of wisdom from you. Thank you, Rhonda.
You're very welcome. Well, in another time, that was interesting. It wasn't at home, but then I did go back to school after 7 years, and I did get my master's degree and my degree from at that point, Frontier Nursing gave me the certification as a nurse midwife, and I went on to CAES, which gave me all the credit for the certification, and I needed three more courses to be able to count it as a master's. So it was a really very nice, a mutual benefit to, I think, both schools and to all of us students to be able to do that. But anyway, so then I did home and hospital birth for several years, and then just because I had four children and I moved more to practice, hospital birth practice with more physicians. Like the midwives practice was all midwives and one backup physician. And then at one point, I think he got another, we had two physicians as backup as the practice got bigger. 1980 was the year of the most home births. And I think that was because it was right at the transition where hospitals hadn't changed and women were changing and saying, "No, we want a different birth situation. We have got to change this." And so we had the highest number of home births. And then I know hospitals were saying, "Okay, we need to change. We need to allow support people in. We need to let women hold their babies." It was like, "We can leave them in their beds. So, we can change the kind of beds." And I think it was a huge change year. But one of the other things I think about, which I thought was interesting, was one of the times as a midwife in the hospital, there was a doctor, a resident from Nigeria, who was getting trained because he was going to go back and work in Nigeria. And I had been to Ghana and Nigeria, so we had talked, so we had kind of gotten close. And so he came to me at one of the times when I was there for a birth, and he said, do you mind if I watch a natural birth with you? Because he said, when I go back to Nigeria, a lot of the births are going to be natural. And I need to know how to deal with things because I
Take
feel like
care
right
of
now,
them.
yeah, it's just it's a whole different way of doing it. And we're not going to have epidurals in a lot of the places where I'm going to practice. And I said, absolutely. Let me ask the woman and if she's okay with it. And of course she was. And it happened to be that it was a retained placenta. So it was actually perfect because that's what, so I could talk
You
to
got
its
to show them
relatives.
collaboration model as well as normal. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And to say, okay, this is perfect. Cause with epidurals, you just go in and you get it out, you know, and if women are comfortable, they, you know, but this is something where she's going to feel this and you've got to be gentle and you've got to explain exactly what you're doing and give them a break if they need a break and, you know, don't take your hand out, but give them some breathing space. So yeah, it ended up being perfect. And afterwards he profusely thanked me because he said, this is what I need to know when I go back to my country.
Well, we think of these little moments in life that have a ripple effect. You were talking about just coincidentally meeting these people traveling and then one birth pivoted your life. Like what you offering to do an exposure to this physician and the ripple effect it probably had on the community he was going to serve. Like, I think sometimes we forget, we feel so little and small, like everything's so hard, everything's too broken or hard. Like these little things have massive ripples that maybe we don't see the end result. Like that lady that allowed you to go to the birth for the first time at 19 had no clue it would completely change your life. So I think sometimes we need to go back to the basics when people are feeling so frustrated and overwhelmed that we have a lot of power and we have a lot of opportunities to share wisdom that we have no idea how it's going to change things later.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. That's so true. So yeah.
Are you still practicing right now, Rhonda?
Well, I'm actually retired.
Okay.
I retired right before COVID. I didn't know that COVID was going to happen, but I
just
was
timing.
Yeah. My age was already appropriate. I was 67 and a half and my mother was diagnosed with colon cancer and she lives 8 hours away.
Okay.
So it was like, okay, this is telling me that because I felt that I needed to be free to be able to go and check in. I also did a lot of gynecology, which I ended up really enjoying. It was a lot of fun because a lot of the women, of course, you know, nurse midwives can do that anyway, but it was then the practice became almost strongly gynecological in the last few years, but I could still see all the women, so many of the women that I had been with their births. I could take them through menopause. I did a number of times that, or you know, I got to see some of the daughters that I had actually helped birth. I know. One of them came in and that's what she said. She said, you know, I don't think you probably recognize me. And of course we laughed because I said,
yeah,
you're
of
right,
course.
You're quite different than the last time I saw
that's
you.
That's so funny. But that's that next level of continuity of care. I think promoting to midwives, like, yes, we can do obstetrical services, but really being full scope primary care providers for women. I've done a lot with the Amish and Mennonites and yeah, they have babies for so long versus like our typical English, it's 2-3. So you're already getting that continuity of care, but like that takes you to a totally different level of midwifery that very few people get to be part of.
Yes. And it's so special. It is so, I mean, you get so bonded, you know, sometimes I would see them as teenagers and we would be talking about periods or birth control and then you'd do their births and you know, I mean, it's so special then to take them through all these big
life stages and you're their guiding,
yes.
You're their guardian angel throughout their woman's life cycles.
Exactly. Or one of the women who came in that I had birthed, you know, helped birth, she had come in and she had said, well, I figured you would be the one to do it because you were the first one to see me naked. And so now you can be the first doctor.
I love it, love it, love it.
Isn't that
oh,
cute?
Ladies are amazing. Oh.
Isn't it? It's such a gift.
It is.
It's such a gift.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of the ladies have been talking sometimes, how do you know that midwifery is your calling? Because some people will be like, I'm thinking about going that way. And a lot of us, when they tell this story, it's like, it hits you like a lightning bolt. It hits you like a lot of people, it's not gentle. Maybe you kind of stumble a little bit, but most of us, we can tell exactly when we saw something or something said, and it just switched a light bulb. And then once you went down the rabbit hole, there was no going back. Like that's what most people will say.
I agree. I agree. In fact, this is great that you get to do this. I bet it's great fun to interview.
Oh, I am so much fun. Yeah, I've been blessed because, I mean, I've evolved where I was the traditional. I had my three babies at home, knew I was going to be a home birth midwife at 16, and then got the reality of once you do labor delivery in the bigger system, Ina May's books only got me so far with like what I wanted midwife utopia to be and what was reality. And so, yeah, you kind of had this disconnect frustration of, can I be the midwife I want to be? How do I be the midwife I want to be? And me being one person, is it going to be enough? Like I started going down the rabbit hole of bigger systems and woman empowerment. And I still do some locums and I still do a little bit of frontline care, but you learn what type of midwife you want to be when you grow and you go older and you get your identity. So yeah, I think that's part of this telling everybody's stories and telling everybody's situations, get a little light bulb and I'm like, oh, I can be that kind of midwife, or, oh, that's really cool. Like a lot of people just don't realize it's possible.
Right. Right. Yeah. And sometimes some of the best things about midwifery, I always say this about the two different practices. I was really happy with both practices, but they were very different. And the midwife practice for a number of years, it was really the home birth practice. It was, you're kind of on call 24/7 because you were on call for a specific couple. Now you get really bonded with that couple and you feel like, I mean, you're in their home. We always did home visits, at least two home visits, other than the you know, for prenatal care, postpartum, we would always check in on them. I mean, it's so bonded, but it's really hard on personal life. It's really hard on family life if you have kids at home or, you know, a loving partner. You know, and so that balance, I'm really glad I did that. The 24/7, I think, was so special. But on the other hand, at some point, it's like, it's wonderful and I can't do it. I just can't do it and be a good mom and be a good partner to someone. So I think, you know, you always weigh it out, but I'm thankful for both. I'm really thankful.
Yeah. Well, and being gentle because we want to be around for the long haul. I think sometimes we beat ourselves up that I'm not the midwife or the guilt or whatever you thought you were going to be. But maybe at this stage of life, you want to balance midwifery a little bit more with motherhood, maybe near retirement. I joke, like we're in Michigan and no birth center regs. I've got a birth house plan in the corner of my property for all my Amish neighbors when I'm at that stage of my life, but my kids are young and I'm not ready to be there 24/7 for them. You kind of evolve, and just like the life cycles of a woman, we have the midwife cycles that are pretty classic. Like younger families, you can either join like a birth center team, or you have to have a really good community to do home births to make it really feasible long term. You have to have good support. So that's part of that art of balancing the balance and challenges of being a mom and trying to give good quality care and personalized care, but then also not turning it into an assembly line. Like that's the art of midwifery that we always struggle with, is like, how many are too many? Like some midwives believe as soon as you get two midwives, like that's not continuity care. And then some say, oh my gosh, it's okay till you're 3, 4. But once you get 7, then it's too many. Like these arts of what we think is good midwifery care, depending on who you compare it to, of course. Like if you're comparing it to the doctors, you're like, oh, I'm phenomenal. But then you're comparing it to the home birth midwife and you're like, oh, I'm kind of lacking. So I would love to hear your thoughts on like midwifery and how we can respect each other's viewpoints, because we're all going to serve different people in different ways. I think that's really important.
Yeah. And I think it would be hard to define what the perfect practice is, because I think it depends. It depends on both the women and also who you are, or what, like you said, what stage of life you're in, because it can be very different. You know, small babies. I mean, when my babies were small, I could take them with me, you know, and breastfeed them there and lay them in a little, you know, crib there. As they got older and they're getting into things, it's like, okay, this isn't working anymore. I really need to leave them home. So I think that women can also, some of the birthing moms can also, I think, be flexible, more flexible. I mean, the continuity care is wonderful, but I remember like when I went to the doctor's practice, there was a period of time where really all of the women could get either one of us. I was actually on call with the doctors and they were a little shocked because they weren't coming to have a midwife. They were coming to have doctors. But what all of us would say, and what the doctors would say too, would be, you know, you're getting the best of both worlds, because you're getting all the wonderful care that a midwife can give you, and you're getting, you know, if you needed something, if you got become complicated and need something more, you're getting our ability to care for you. And they say, really, and I would say that too. I'd say you're getting the best of both. You know, we all come with different gifts, and they're all put together really nice. So, you know, it was
Everything
very different.
is about how you present it. I mean, like, I think sometimes it's amazing. Like, even about students, like, I've like, I know midwives that never would get a student to be able to go to a birth because it's how they presented it to their clients. Or I had the opposite where I was blown away. These midwives never had a student refuse because it's how they were presented. And it's how those phrases, those are those arts of like, turning everything into a positive, turning everything into a benefit versus bringing up that weird little thing or agreeing. Like, I think that's part of the art of midwifery too.
Yes. And I think you're right. You're absolutely right. Because students can be wonderful. I mean, they are so enthusiastic and ready to do this, and they're supportive and they're right there. And a lot of women afterwards would say, that was wonderful. But you're right. If you didn't present it right, they would say, oh, a student? I mean, I don't
know. Yeah. Well, a lot of times people say, well, she wanted a home birth. She doesn't want a lot of people there. But I said, who's ever going to show them normal ever in their life if we don't? I joked with my home birth. I was labor and delivery nurse finishing midwifery school. I'll put bleachers up. Anybody want? Like, I worked all the way to the end, and the joke was they're going to get me a taxi when I go into labor at work and take me home. And I said, all the bleachers in my house, if you guys want to come see normal, you can come see normal. And as long as you look at me the same when I come back from maternity leave, we're okay. But it's the truth. How do we get the next generation of physicians and nurses and even the siblings, like the culture, how do we get them exposed to normal when we're trying to hide it? Like, it's interesting to me.
It is. And when I was in school to get my nurse midwifery, I continued working at the hospital as a labor and delivery nurse. And everyone knew I'd had my babies at home, and everyone knew I actually was helping with births at home. So, I mean, one of the doctors, it was really funny because he, one of my pregnancies, you know, toward the end, he would just laugh and he'd say, so everyone else usually is at home and goes into labor and comes in, and you're going to be at work at the hospital, and you're going to go into labor and you're going to go home. And he just thought that was the funniest thing.
Yep, that was the big pick. They're like, well, Leslie's got this all backwards. We're so confused. Yep. I'll come here to work, and I'm grateful you're here. If I need you, I start bleeding, I'll just go in triage, but probably going home. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But the other thing is, I was really glad I did that because it was right at the time when hospitals were discussing LDR rooms, LDRP rooms, you know, people being in, could children be in? And there was all these huge discussions. And I would say it's not for us to decide. It's for the woman to decide. So yes, there are women who would never want their children there. There are women who want their children there. If they're well prepared, you know, and they have someone who's there for them. Not
right,
for
right,
kids,
yeah.
But for them, then if the child is not doing well, there's someone there that can take them out. But I said, that's not for us to decide. That's for the family to decide, you know, and as long as it's safe and we know that it's safe, you know, but I was
well,
glad
that's
to
part
there.
Of that segue of just going to the basics of, is this a safety question or is it a fear and bias? Because sometimes the cultural preferences and cultural norms, people just assume it's an evidence or it's a safety. And it's like, I've been blessed to go all over the country in all settings on purpose. Like, I just roll my eyes when you're in a town that's isolated and everybody does it a certain way for 10 years and they're all convinced from each other, this is the best of the best. But it's interesting, like how do you gently bring in cultural differences without offending people in some, like you and I play that art of like, we know what it could be like. And some of these nurse midwives that are practicing have never seen a home birth, never truly seen natural. Like I argue you never see a natural birth in the hospital. As soon as they step foot in there, it doesn't matter if they're not medicated. They're truly not going to be instinctual like they would be at home. So they don't get to see that. It's unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And a lot of times it's just a prejudice. It's that they would not want their children there. And I say, that's fine.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that other people can't do that,
right.
You know, and we would have these huge discussions about all of that, you know, and put, So I was glad to be part of that because I feel like I could present it differently and say, I've seen children at birth and they do wonderfully and they're excited and it bonds them to the baby. Doesn't mean everyone has to have it, but it also doesn't mean someone shouldn't have it.
Right. Well, and part of the art, like I learned over time being a W-2 employed midwife in the hospital was very, very hard because I usually like didn't play nice. I asked a lot of questions. I wasn't a good employee. But locum was perfect for me because they had me for 3 months. They were super short staffed. I was professional, but there was a few situations where they're just talking, home birth midwives are psychotic and crazy, and whoever chooses that is nuts. So then I would quietly pull that person to the side and say, well, I actually chose that. Do you feel like I'm a nuts, crazy person? Because I think we should have a conversation about this. Like, I just, because I also knew I didn't have to work with them for years and years. And hopefully, like, instead of just calling them out at the moment, but like, you never know who's around you. You never, like, this, like, so those are those little opportunities of ripple effects that I'm like, okay, well, whether they get offended, but I was like, this is those opportunities that are little, but it's the art of doing it very gently, where you're not just arrogant and starting to get aggressive and putting, belittling people. But how do we open up eyes gently? How do we open up eyes to possibilities? And it's hard sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I remember, it's the same kind of thing that working with the nurses, and that was that I got tired of nurses keeping reminding people that they could have an epidural if they wanted it, or they could have pain medication if they wanted it, when they would be in pain. And I finally said, look, please put me down as one of the people who will do a session with the nurses about this. Because, and I would say that, I would say, this is like, you know, if someone's on a diet, yes, it's really hard to refuse food, but you wouldn't come in with a plate full of goodies.
Chocolate. Are you sure you don't want some of this chocolate? Are you sure? Exactly. They're smelling it and they're on a diet and they want to lose weight. Like, that's just mean.
It is mean. And that's what I would say. Yes, they're going to look like they're in pain. They've chosen to do this and it's healthy pain and they have done the classes and they're ready for it. Don't offer them.
You're not supporting them in the way they want to be supported. Yeah,
exactly. They know it's there. Everyone knows they can get it. Why would you, like, yeah, like your diet thing. Why would you remind them at their weak moments that, hey, we've got this right here for you if you just want to choose it.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of the culture is they really believe their health thing because no pain is the best way in their personal viewpoints. Like, it's a lot of people will say, I chose an epidural. I think no woman should have pain in labor, and that's just mean or whatever. But we have to pause, and that's why birth plans are so important. I know people start pushing research that she's a higher chance of a C-section if she has a birth plan. And I was like, yeah, because it's how you treat her. It's not the actual birth plan. But it's interesting how, like, you just get these, like, them having a voice on a piece of paper and you having a relationship advocating. I know a lot of home birth midwives have had trouble. I just interviewed a lady yesterday. For a while, the nurses used to think she was mean and torturing your ladies because they'd be begging for an epidural and she'd be telling them no, because they talked all through the pregnancy. When I get to the point of transition and I ask you for my epidural, please, please, please tell me no. They didn't know that part of the story. So all they see is this little glimpse. So I think it's really important for us, the more we can expose each other to situations and understanding it, we just see a little piece and we make our own assumptions of what from that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And of course, having seen so many unmedicated natural births, a lot of us as midwives know that it's just a little hump. And you can get her over it, and then she's so pleased, but that she needs the encouragement. You're really close. Mm-hmm. You can do this. You're doing great.
Yeah, we're the ones at home like, girl, you're in the home stretch, versus they got this sorry puppy dog face at them like, oh, I hope I can get the epidural in you fast enough before the baby comes. And you and I are just like, oh, I'm feeling mental pressure. You don't puppy. Going. And the average person, like, I joked, we need to write a book, like, pain, poop, and something else. Only midwives can get excited about that, or like some silly scene. Because it's true. Like, if you know natural birth and you know it's not, you go to a different place, you know where she is in the stages of her labor, and you're empowering her on that part of it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's funny.
I think we need, like, I'm going to take little scripts and memoirs. We'll put little funny stories and little slogans and things everybody says. But the unique occupation of midwifery, not just for a passion and calling, but the things we can say in our context that we would be slapped any other job, any other scenario or situation. I just smile in my head. I'm like, this is the only time I could say this, and it's totally appropriate.
I know. It's true. It's true. Yeah, yeah, it's funny. I remember one home birth where the woman so wanted to watch her baby come out. She had tried two other times and just, you know, at that moment, it was so intense.
So intense, yeah.
She just couldn't do it. And so she said, please. And I said, okay, we're going to set up mirrors. We're going to, you know, we're going to try really hard. Same thing. She got to that point.
You can't open her eyes up for it.
This is it. You know, if you're going to look, you've got to look now. This is really it. I can't, you know. And we just laughed. It's like, it was a great idea, but it's okay. You did great. Your births were wonderful. You just couldn't do it, and it's okay. It really is okay.
But it's the importance that you tried everything in your hardest to meet her wishes the best you could. And it was her body. It wasn't you made a choice for her. It wasn't her. It was her situation. And like, I think that's part of the basics of giving rights to women that are little subtle things. I think too many times, like even just doing a vaginal exam, just ripping a sheet open. I don't care if she's an epidural. Like, you're touching her most private part of her body. And I get it. Like, these little things we just take for granted because we do it all the time, but this is very vulnerable to them. We just sometimes have to step back and pause and not go on autopilot and habit for some of these things that may be very aggressive, but we don't realize it. So Rhonda, I definitely could talk to you for hours and hours. You are just like my kind of midwife jam. Are there any words of wisdom for the midwives listening to this or aspiring with midwives? I always end with just kind of any pearls or gems you have.
Oh my. Oh boy, that's a really good question. And
I should warn people. I'm going to get better. I'll start warning. But sometimes it's good when it's organic because then it's just kind of what pops in your head. And then we kind of just go on that because there's 1,000 things you could say. But
No, I mean, I think just, you know, as a midwife, making sure that you take care of yourself, you know. So, and I remember when I finally was talking about retiring and saying, you know, I'm not quite ready. It's really sad for me not to think of myself, because for me, it's such a big part of my definition of myself.
Your identity. And that's what a lot of midwives deal with, especially in the community center. They do it till their body can't do it no more.
You know, but someone told me, and I thought it was really good advice. And they said, you know, much better to go out when you still love it than when you don't love it anymore, when you're really burnt out.
It's a forced exit, and it's a bitter, not a joyful highlight.
Exactly. And then she's right, because I just, you know, what I carry with me is just positive feelings and memories. And I don't do it as a midwife, but I still do women's health care on an international medical trip almost every year.
So cool.
I
never know a single midwife that just stops doing some form of midwifery. It's not the corporate W-2 paycheck or traditional, but they're teaching, they're mentoring, they're speaking, they're writing memoirs. I've never met a midwife that isn't doing some form in their next stage of life of advocacy. It's just a different, it's the retirement midwife role. Like, we've got to maybe make a scope like we do. ACNM has the midwife role. We're going to make like a retirement ACNM scope role of what the new generation, because it's amazing. I think some people feel guilty. Like, I'm not being a midwife. I'm like, you totally are. Like, you totally are with the mission work and the support. It's just a different kind of midwifery.
No, that's great. I'm glad to hear that, because that's definitely the way I feel. And I got to work with a local indigenous midwife in January, and I'm going back down to the same area. And we work with the local health department, but she was so wonderful because she knew all the local herbs. She would just walk around with me in the village and be able to say, this is what we would use for this, and this is what we would use for this. And it was so much, we loved working with each other because we both, you know, came from different aspects in some ways, and then had so much identity with each other as midwives. It was really fun. It was very nice.
Oh, well, I'm excited that you get to do that trip again.
Thank you. Me too.
Well, I really appreciate your time today, Rhonda. It was truly a pleasure. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thanks so much. I've enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.